This is a saving throw interview, and we are still on the scene at Fan Expo, and we are sitting down to talk with Robin D. Laws, a man whom my head of news tells me I will be in 30 years. I hope I'm half that lucky. Let's start off with just tell the crowd who you are and what they might be familiar with if they didn't listen to the last interview, and I don't blame them because it sounded lame.
My name is Robin D. Laws. You may know me from such role-playing game designs as Gumshoe, the HeroQuest role-playing system, Feng Shui, and others, or any of my 8 novels, including the most recent one, The World Womb Gambit, which is in the Pathfinder Tales series from Peso, and also such books of gaming nonfiction as Robin's Laws of Good Game Mastering, Hamlet's Hit Points, and 40 Years of Gen Con.
Hamlet's Hit Points is something I bought and will read, along with all the other things I've bought and will read and review. I'm not good at this, am I? But you just finished up a panel on the Game Mastering Masterclass, and what do you think the two biggest pieces of advice you might want to give to new GMs out there?
The two main pieces of advice in any Game Mastering seminar are basically divided into two categories. One, learning to look for things that seem like you shouldn't be giving your players that you really should. So often the question is, well, my players really like to do this, and how do I stop them? And the answer is, well, it's because they want to do that, you should find a way to let them that seems entertaining and cool. The other problem is that often you get to things that are really interpersonal conflicts where people are being selfish and hogging spotlight time, or they're cheating, or they're arguing endlessly about rules, where they're attempting to assert power over the GM and other people in the group in a way that has nothing to do with good gameplay or having a fun time together, but is really a variant of being obnoxious, and how to tell the one set of problems from the other set of problems, and then how to diplomatically call people on the things that they're doing that are actually dysfunctional personality things, and hopefully you can get them to change. And if you can't get them to change, you actually have to stop playing with them, as difficult as that might be in a personal level.
Okay, and last year you were talking about Hamlet's Hit Points, which had just come out, and now the word is floating around that a lot of the ideas that fuel Hamlet's Hit Points is going to be turned into an RPG system. You want to tell us about that?
Right. The rules engine is called Drama System. The first game that will be run with this rules engine is called Hill Folk, and basically this comes out of the observation in Hamlet's Hit Points that there are two main types of scene in any type of story, one of which role-playing has always done really well, and the other of which we have barely scratched the surface of. The thing that we've done really well is a procedural scene, the scene where characters encounter an external obstacle and overcome it. So you may run away from the giant rolling rock that's threatening to crush you, or you may pilot your ship through the ion storm, or you may fight the orc, or you may even convince a guy that you don't care very much about to let you into a restricted area. Dramatic scenes are scenes where you are engaged with in an emotional struggle for inner goals, for things that satisfy you emotionally, with other people that you care about and have to have an ongoing relationship with. And so that's the essence of all kinds of stories and plays and movies, but it's something that we don't deal with very much in role-playing. And when that comes up spontaneously, when one player character wants something from the other, almost invariably you get this pattern, if there's any resistance at all between them, which is a player A, who in the term that we use in Drama System, who is the petitioner, the one who wants something, says, well, I would like you to do this. Player B, who's the grantor, the one who may or may not grant this desire of player A, then says, it would be out of character for me to compromise with you in any way, because good role-playing is sticking to an extremely narrow conception of what your player is and digging in. And then player A, and of course much of that is subtext in an actual interaction, but that's really what they're saying. Player A then says, no, but I really want this. And player B then says, well, I really don't want you to this. And then you get stalemate every time. In this game, in Drama System, it gives you all sorts of reasons to give in about half the time. So there's a very simple mechanical thing where you track the flow of tokens. If you give in to somebody, you get a drama token, which then gives you power in the narrative to use later. And if you accumulate two drama tokens, that you can then require someone to give you an emotional concession. It may not be everything you want, but it's something. And that's how dramatic scenes work in a show like The Sopranos or 6 Feet Under or Shameless or anything that's primarily focused on the emotional interaction between characters, is that sometimes people give in, sometimes they dig in, and it's that pattern that creates a story. And so I've been in-house testing this game for a fair while now, and what it does is, you know those game sessions where you have sort of all the rules fade away and you just start interacting with each other and a story just sort of spontaneously arises and it's sort of magical, and then next week you try to recreate that.
And it never happens, and then you tell everyone, we had a great time playing D&D, we didn't roll dice at all, and then I come in as hipster game master and it's like, well, you didn't play D&D then, did you?
You had an emergent play experience of drama occurring spontaneously, but it's hard to recreate without that superstructure. So drama system makes that happen every game session.
All right. And the other thing coming out, and coming out fairly soon, is Ashen Stars, a new setting for Gumshoe. Tell us a bit about that.
So Ashen Stars is the gritty space opera setting for the Gumshoe system. And you are freelance troubleshooters in an area of space known as the Bleed that has been kind of left behind after the great utopian interstellar empire, which previously was so successful, so peaceful, so wealthy that no one even knew there was money, faced a terrible war about 5 to 7 years ago and had to retreat to its core worlds. And all of a sudden, gritty reality has intruded on this beautiful space utopia. And you're the people who pick up the pieces on a contract basis and go in and solve the problems that the Combine Navy used to solve, whether those are whether you're tracking fugitives or you're dealing with interstellar anomalies or looking for evidence of the intrusion of horrible alien entities that you want to keep out of this region of space. And so basically what the game does is it takes the things about popular space opera settings that have always made them difficult to translate into role-playing and discards them in favor of stuff that does work really well in the role-playing form. So, for example, people really like the super positive, optimistic vision of the Star Trek universe, except when they have to play in it, because people like to be kind of skeezy sometimes. They don't want to be goody-two-shoes.
And playing around in Star Trek isn't that fun. That's why a lot of the writers for it tend to paint the Federation a bit darker and more sinister than they are. See all of Deep Space Nine.
Right, and even as you could see in Trek, they kept playing with that idea of how do we take this kind of no-conflict world and add more conflict and shadings of gray to it. Well, shadings of gray is what Ashen Stars are all about. And so what that does, another thing we do is get rid of the command structure, right? Because on a TV show, it makes total sense to have one character be the captain giving orders to the to his subordinates, because that allows you to convey information and exposition in a dramatic, fun, clear way. But in a gaming session, it sucks if one person is a captain ordering everybody else around. Or even if the captain, who is usually the most important, interesting character, is an NPC, basically the GM ordering everybody around, that also blows. So you want to get back to the usual sort of small affiliation of independent PCs who get along by consensus and make decisions collectively. And so that's what you are as a what is called a laser crew. You have your own ship and you take the contracts you want to take and you make the decisions you want to make, but you're always limited to a degree of how depraved you can get, how skeezy you can be, because you have to manage your ship's reputation score. Because if your crew gets a reputation for cutting corners and torturing suspects and engaging in shady trade deals, contracts will be further out from one another. You won't be able to get a new lucrative contract right away. You'll have to really scramble for one. And in the course of that time, you're racking up costs of your ship upkeep, of your viralware, of your cybernetic upkeep. And so the better your reputation, the faster you get a new contract after the next one. So there's an economic incentive to be good balanced against the temptation to be bad. And that's sort of the core of the theme of the game, which is about the dichotomy between selfishness and altruism.
All right, so Gumshoe is a largely investigative system, and how will you bring those elements into play in space opera, and what will you be adding to the game to just have all sorts of fun sci-fi adventure type stuff.
The biggest add-on in the game is the space combat system, which obviously you need in a space opera game. I started with one that was very complicated and then eventually made my way to a much more elegant, fun, simple system that still feels like it has a tactical element to it, which is basically the gumshoe way of doing things, is creating the feel of fictional narratives rather than trying to simulate the nuts and bolts of anything. And in terms of how gumshoe works with space opera, if you look at a show like Firefly or Trek or Stargate or whatever, really those are procedural shows, and they're structured a lot like cop shows, because most one-hour TV shows about problem solving follow the same structure, in that the characters are confronted with a mystery or a strange situation. They have to gather information to figure out what's going on. Often that leads them to a crisis or a moral dilemma, which they then have to solve. And sometimes there's a big physical conflict at the end of that. So really, the investigative system behind Gumshoe, although you wouldn't think of it as such off the bat, is perfectly suited for a space opera game.
Do you want to go into more detail about the setting? Just any interesting, like what sort of levels of technology we might be seeing? Are we going to see like cyberware or any sort of crazy... But if you were to put this on a scale with, you know, sort of the very high high science fiction like Star Trek, or even farther with Lensman, to a very low gritty sci-fi, sort of sci-fi like you see in the new Battlestar Galactica or Planetes or even Cowboy Bebop, what sort of level do you think you might see?
Basically, the vibe of it is we encourage GMs to think of this as, in the 70s, there was a TV show that was really bright and 70s and optimistic, and then they rebooted it now and added darker, cooler, weirder elements to it. And so that brings in like viralware and cybernetics and stuff that you would not have had in a classic 70s era show, and also this more of this darker, conflicted vibe that we talked about earlier. So I don't know where you would, if you basically think sort of a Trek-level technology to which weirder viralware and cybernetics have been bolted on for this new reboot, that's what we're looking at.
Okay, and are we talking like loads and loads of aliens, or is this just humans running around being bad to other humans?
There are six main races, including humans, including Cybes, who used to be human but now consider themselves a new species because they've used cybernetic technology. There's the Kick-Fick, who are locust men. There's the serene armadillo-like warriors called the Tavok. There's the sort of eerily beautiful Bala, who age in reverse. And there's the Darug, who are these hunched former enemies of the Combine, who have switched over sides and are trying to fit in their formerly totalitarian culture with the freer culture of the Combine worlds. And then finally, they're the Vaz Maul, who basically look like your classic big-headed, big-eyed, gray aliens. And what they used to be is godlike energy beings who, in the course of the last disastrous war, through means that are now mysterious, were forced back into these degenerate physical forms and desperately want to find the secret of returning to their previous omnipotent state.
Okay, now you've written a novel for Pathfinder. Is that a cue that you might be interested in doing some freelance work for them, building setting, or is that just not, or just a completely different track for you?
They're keeping me busy on the fiction line, but because they integrate the fiction with the world and vice versa, stuff that I wind up doing in the fiction winds up in the products by sort of a backdoor arena, as it were. So, for example, I did a novella for them in their Serpent Skull Adventure Path series, all about the Mwangi Expanse, which is their equivalent of the Heart of Africa. And so things that were established there about the various tribal groups that the characters meet as they go through wind up being canonical for Galarian.
Okay. Thanks for talking. Do you want to throw out... Do you want to mention how they can get those new products you mentioned, when they're coming out, where you'd expect to find them, and then maybe throw any mentions to websites or Twitter feeds you want people to follow you at?
Okay, so Ash and Stars is available through Pelgrane Press. you can buy from the online store, or it's going through distribution, so you can find it in a discerning game store near you. World Womb Gambit is available from Paizo and at your friendly neighborhood game store, and I think is in bookstore distribution as well. If you want to look for me, my blog now is at robindelaws@blogspot.com, so just Google my name plus blogspot, and that'll get you there. Or you can follow me on Twitter at Robin D. Laws, all just one word. Or you can find me on Google Plus as Robin Laws.
Okay. Good talking to you. I'll let you know when this drops.
Okay. Take care.